Good morning, friends. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show on this Friday. Friday, February 26th. Moving on through Lent. This is the third Friday of Lent. Find some place to enjoy a fish fry tonight and maybe even the Stations of the Cross every Friday, of course, penitential throughout the year, but particularly, I think, intensified during the Lenten season. Anyway, looking forward to being with you today. At the bottom of the hour, my good friend Dr. Allen Alday, professor and behavior analyst at the University of Kentucky, will be in. I was pleased to be a part of an event here last weekend. I'm blanking out. In which I was with Dr. Alday offering a parenting toolbox for problem behaviors. Just again, keep in mind, he's not a psychologist or a counselor, a therapist, doesn't claim to be. He deals strictly in the realm of behavior. And we'll be having him on. And if you've got a question, if you're already listening to the program and you've got a question, a parenting issue that you'd like to call in, love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4 is, of course, the number you can call anytime during the program. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can always post through Facebook or on Twitter. You can even call in a question if you don't want to come on the air and pose a question about a friend. I'm making air quotes there, because surely none of us have parenting struggles. Anyway, what Allen said he's going to talk about today is dissing problem behavior. He says, hope it will make sense. I'm sure it will, Allen, when you're in here. Anyway, at the end of the next hour, I'm going to have Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. We've had her as a guest before. She is an active religious sister blogger. Always writes some excellent stuff. And she had a bizarre dream recently that she's going to tell us about and how it relates to the Year of Mercy. So I'll look forward to that conversation. A few other things we'll get into today as well. The Republican debate last night, I drifted in and out of sleep watching part of it. But there was an article that showed one area in which, believe it or not, the Donald seemed relatively reasonable. We'll get into all that a little bit later in the program. Also, the question to consider when thinking about Catholicism and why I'm rooting for Sylvester Stallone. The Oscars coming up Sunday night. I don't know if I'll watch them. It's kind of like the beauty of sports in the age of ESPN. When you're a busy person, like a lot of us are, sitting down to watch an entire ball game, not always realistic, but you can always catch the highlights. And that's probably what I'll do. The Oscars tends to be a very long presentation. But, of course, Sylvester Stallone up for Best Supporting Actor for his role in the film Creed, which I think is his second acting Oscar nomination, 39 years since his first, 1977. I wonder if that's the longest gap between Oscar nominations in Oscar history. Maybe not, but that's got to be at least in the conversation. So, his work, again, and as Rocky Balboa in the movie Creed, I'm rooting for him to win an Oscar, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program, too. Again, welcome your calls, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text in on that number. For our prayer on this Friday, as I said, every Friday, penitential. And so, we're going to pray the Anima Christi, this reflection on our suffering Lord and his great sacrifice for us, his invitation for us not to grieve his death, certainly to grieve the hatred in the human heart that brought it about, but to gaze upon his suffering body, to reflect on the wounds, and to understand that it's in his wounds that we find our healing. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Soul of Christ, sanctify me. Body of Christ, save me. Blood of Christ, inebriate me. Water from the side of Christ, wash me. Passion of Christ, strengthen me. O good Jesus, hear me. Within thy wounds, hide me. Separated from thee, let me never be. From the malignant enemy, defend me. In the hour of my death, call me and bid me come to thee, that with thy saints I may praise thee forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. One of the things I want to encourage you to do today, I mean, you can do this every Friday. Every Friday, as I said, in the Catholic understanding, has a penitential quality to it. It's not just during Lent, actually. Even though it's only during Lent that Catholics are obligated to practice abstinence from meat, although we can eat fish, fish fry, anybody, but abstinence from meat as a sign of penitence, of sacrifice, and not sacrifice for its own sake, but sacrifice to unite us more fully with the suffering of Christ and to deepen our hunger and our desire for ultimate things. But that penitential quality of Friday, by the way, meant to continue on throughout the entire year, but there are other things you can substitute in outside of Lent besides the abstinence from meat. Anyway, here's what I want to encourage you to consider, is to, on a particular Friday, think of a particular issue that you want to offer up. If you grew up Catholic, you probably heard that from your grandmother when you went through a hard time. Offer it up. What can you unite in your sacrifice? What cause or concern in intercession can you lift up? And here's the thing I want to encourage you to think about doing today is to do it for unborn children in crisis pregnancies and for those who find themselves, both the expectant mother and the biological father, whether that is the mother woman's husband or her boyfriend or whatever the case may be, offer your acts of penitence today and penance and sorrow for sin and sacrifices. Offer them for the sake of unborn children. Pray in doing so for the women and couples who find themselves overwhelmed by the idea of raising the unborn child. Pray that killing the child will not even be on the table or considered as an option. Pray for conversion of hearts, that they will find room in their hearts for the recognition that abortion is a profound contradiction of human dignity and really an assault on femininity, an assault on what it means to be a woman and a mother, and that their fears, or in the worst case, their selfishness will not cause them to ignore that knowledge deep within themselves that what is within them is a child, and that child, as all human persons do from the moment of our conception, that they have an inalienable right to life. And pray we can continue working toward building a culture that welcomes all human life. I had the opportunity. We have a local 40 Days for Life chapter here in the Lexington, Kentucky area. You may, if you're listening here in Central Kentucky or you're in another area, perhaps there's one near you. It's sort of an intensified time of peaceful prayer and witness in a community where there is an abortion clinic. Not to go shout people down, not to go attack people, but to be that witness in the midst of grave difficulty. And we've got some wonderful people who are organizing the 40 Days for Life. And you can look it up. Just Google up 40 Days, put the number 40, not F-O-R-T-Y, but the number 40, 40 Days for Life. And you can probably find the one that's in your area. My daughter and I having an opportunity yesterday, and I'm thankful for my friend Tim, who's helping organize it here, for reminding me about it. Because here's the thing, you know, and I realized this yesterday. And I have been a pro-life person on the issue of abortion since I was, gosh, in high school. It wasn't really long after I became more serious about my faith, by the grace of God, that I think I encountered a book by the Protestant Christian Francis Schaeffer, How Shall We Then Live? And it was a book and a film, I think, about the issue of abortion. And it just resonated with me. Even though I was young in my faith, it resonated with me about this great assault on human dignity, which has become such a part of our culture in the West. And so I had that conviction. It would be a long time before I would come into the full communion of the Catholic Church and the full vision of Catholicism. But I was always frustrated as a United Methodist Christian that our denomination, our Protestant denomination, was not more pro-life. And in you know, so that's a conviction I've always carried. But here's the thing I've found, and this is true, I think, in any culture, at any time, no matter what the grave evil is that exists in that culture, is we become deadened to it. We do. We become hardened to it. We don't think about it. I just, you know, recently saw the film Hotel Rwanda. If you've never seen that, man, heavy duty. And you realize what brutality was happening, what disregard for human life and violence was occurring, while the rest of the world largely ignored it. And I think the same thing happens in our own communities, where there are little ones who are dying because women are fearful, or because men have abandoned them, or sometimes people are just selfish. And it's easy for us to grow deadened to it. So I thank my friends with the 40 Days for Life and for the campaign and for the opportunity to go and to pray, to simply stand in peaceful witness and in prayer for an hour yesterday, and to have that desire rekindled in me to stand. Because I'll tell you, folks, if we don't stand, and I don't mean in condemnatory fashion, we acknowledge ourselves that we have contributed to a culture that has closed our hearts to the unborn. If we don't stand, folks, and if we won't stand for these voiceless and vulnerable, who will? We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show. My question of the day on the other side of the break. Minutes past the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday, February 26th. We're 2 days away from the Oscars Sunday night, the Academy Awards, and I'll probably maybe pop in and out on those just to see what's happening. It tends to be a pretty long, drawn-out affair, but one person that I will be rooting for in the Academy Awards is for Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Stallone, who I said earlier, is up for his second acting Oscar, I think, in his career. The first one coming to him in 1977, where he was nominated for Best Actor in his self-written film Rocky, which he evidently wrote over a period of 3 days, and then sold on the condition that he would only allow somebody to make the film if, in fact, he got to star as Rocky. And, you know, there were some, I think, studios that balked on it. Whoever took him up on it looks brilliant in retrospect, because, of course, it became this fantastic film franchise with a great staying power. And of all of Sylvester Stallone's notable characters, you know, whether it was John Rambo or some others, certainly his role as Rocky Balboa will be what he's known for. And I'm trying to look down the list here of his competition here for actors in a supporting role. Also, Christian Bale in The Big Short, Tom Hardy in The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo in Spotlight, Mark Rylance in Bridge of Spies, and Sylvester Stallone in Creed. By the way, did a little reading on Stallone. He was raised Catholic. Does that sound familiar? Evidently, back in 2010, he said he'd come back to the practice of the faith. But since then, evidently, has drifted again. So pray for the soul of Sylvester Stallone. But I've always enjoyed the Rocky franchise, some more than others. And that's the question I'm asking today. There have been 7 films, right, in the Rocky franchise. You had Rockies 1-5, then you had Rocky Balboa, and then you had Creed, this most recent one that came out. I've seen 5 of the 7. I didn't see Rocky 5, and I didn't see Rocky Balboa, though I've heard that the latter of those two, Rocky Balboa, was actually surprisingly good. So I'm asking you, whichever, however many you've seen, and maybe you've seen all 7, rank them from best to worst. To me, it begins and ends with Rocky, right? I mean, that's where you start. The original, which I think is just flat out a great movie. And I'll play a little clip of you here. One of my favorite scenes in this movie is after Rocky's gotten his opportunity to fight Apollo Creed, this magnanimous gesture by the champ who had another fighter back out. That great scene, of course, where the guy goes, "Rocky, do you believe America is a land of opportunity?" "Yeah." But manager, Mickey, who had earlier given his locker away to somebody and told him he was a bum, basically wasting his life as a low, as a hitman for a loan shark. Burgess Meredith's character, Mickey, goes to Rocky's very nondescript apartment and offers to be his manager for the big fight. I'll let you hear a little bit of this exchange.
Listen to me. I want to be your manager. You follow that, do you?
Fight said I don't need no manager.
But you can't buy what I'm going to give you. I mean, I've got pain and I've got experience.
Well, I got pain. I got experience, too.
Listen, kid.
Hey, look, hey, Mick.
What?
Look, I need your help about 10 years ago, right? 10 years ago?
Right.
You never helped me, no. You didn't care.
Well, if you wanted help, why didn't you ask? Why didn't you just ask me, kid?
Look, I asked, but you never heard nothing.
Well, I'm 76 years old. And,
I want to forward ahead here to about the 125 mark there, Ethan, because I want to hear, too. Now, after, he gets – Rocky stays in the bathroom. He won't come out. Mickey finally, I think, realizes that he's not going to convince Balboa to let him manage, and he begins to leave, and this is when Stallone really lets his anger fly.
It took me long enough to get here. You're 10 years ago to my house. Huh? What's the matter? You don't like my house? My house stink. That's right, it stinks!
I ask no favors from you! Don't fall around me!
Talk about your prime.
What about my prime, Nick? At least you had a prime!
Oh,
I ain't
man.
Had no prime, I ain't had a nut. Legs are going, everything is going, no one's getting no nut. Guy comes up, offers me a fight. Big deal, wanna fight the fight? Yeah, I'll fight the big fight. I want to go and fight that big fight that was going to happen to me. I want to get that.
That is a great scene right there. Oh, man, I tell you what. People love to make fun of Rocky's voice, everything. I think at times the guy's got some acting chops. He wasn't just a meathead, man. I mean, the guy could act. No doubt, there's a great deal. Of course, after he yells at Mickey, finally, you have that great scene where he runs down onto the street and chases Mickey down and then brings him back. And, of course, the rest, as they say, is history. Now, he stretches his acting chops a little bit more, maybe gets over a little bit of the schmaltzy in my second favorite of the Rocky franchise, and that's Rocky III. And, of course, after he's been, after he realizes that Mickey, who now has died, has been setting it up with Patsy fighters, and he's gotten beat up, of course, by Mr. T, Clubber Lang, he's starting to question himself until he gets a pep talk down at the beach from Adrian.
Alive.
Those fights weren't right. They weren't, Adrian. I never fought anybody who was all in their prime. It was always some angle to hold on to the title longer than I should have had it. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying here?
I understand, but you've got to understand that he loved you and that was his job, protecting you.
Look, that protecting don't help nothing. It only makes things worse. You wake up after a few years thinking you're a winner, but you're not. You're really a loser. And so we wouldn't have had the title as long. So what? At least it would have been real, Adrian.
It was real.
Nothing is real if you don't believe in who you are. I don't believe in myself no more. Don't you understand? What if I don't believe? That's it. He's finished. It's over. That's it.
That's not it.
That is it.
Why don't you tell me the truth?
What are you putting me through, Adrian? You want to know the truth? The truth is I don't want to lose what I got. In the beginning, I didn't care about what happened to me. I go in a ring, I get busted up. I didn't care. But now there's you, there's the kid. I don't want to lose what I got.
What do we have that can't be replaced? What? A house. We got cars. We got money. We got everything but the truth. What's the truth, damn it?
I'm afraid, all right? You want to hear me say it? You want to break me down? All right, I'm afraid. For the first time in my life, I'm afraid.
Ah, a little vulnerability there from Rocky, brought out by his feisty wife, Adrian. Of course, the low point had to be Rocky IV when Adrian loses faith in Rocky. You can't win! But there's that great line there in Rocky III, where after their big blow-up, how'd you get to be so tough? Because I live with a fighter! Anyway, I'm rooting for Sylvester Stallone. I hope he does. I hope he wins it. If you haven't seen Creed, and I'll play a little clip of that later, because, man, that's a really good movie. Very surprisingly good, about the son of Apollo Creed, who shows up and wants Rocky to train him. And no, Rocky doesn't fight, thankfully. I mean, he's pushing 70. But it's a very, very good film, and Rocky does a great job. I don't think this is just a sort of golden achievement award, this nomination. I think he deserves it. Just my 2 cents. So if you've got a thought on ranking the Rocky movies, would love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4. I guess that'll have to suffice for our sports update for today. Though, did see a couple of college basketball scores this morning. Duke with a big win over Florida State. Utah, who's climbing back into the rankings, hammering Arizona State, and Indiana all over Illinois. I tell you what, Illinois, a once proud program that has really fallen on some hard times, really ever since Bill Self came in, and then Bruce Weber took over Bill Self's team and took them to the final game. Bruce Weber couldn't keep it going, and now Bruce Weber's struggling at Kansas State too. But Indiana looking like they're making a run for the conference championship, and I don't think anybody saw that coming. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's real quick sneak in some What Were You Thinking awards for the day. We got a couple of good ones. Looking, of course, spanning the globe. This from Dayton, Ohio. A man in an armed robbery at an Ohio convenience store Wednesday night told the clerk, "I'm just messing with you." After the clerk told him to get out of the store, the man armed with a knife was wearing a black mask over his face. When he walked up to the clerk can be heard asking the robber several times if he's kidding, and the robber responds, "No." A moment later, the robber starts laughing, pulls off his face mask, and says, "I'm just messing with you." The clerk yells at the robber to get out. He apologizes and can be seen walking out. This is the new defense, I guess, if you get caught. Evidently, the clerk recognized the robber by his eyeglasses and voice. "I was just joking. What are you talking about? Don't be so serious." Man, what were you thinking? How about this? Amazon yanks serial killer's book after outrage. Amazon has stopped selling a memoir written by a Canadian serial killer after the publisher admitted it was tricked into printing the work. Picton, in his own words, tells a revisionist version of Murder Robert Picton's life story. It was briefly a bestseller on Amazon's Canadian site. Upset family members of the victims and politicians had clamored for the removal of the book. Evidently, they thought it was a book about Picton's murders instead of a book by Picton. Oh, Amazon. Somebody needs to improve their scrutiny just a little bit of the projects that you take on. And then the winner, though, we're going to give the winner. Listen, I'm all for fighting the man, fighting the system, all this stuff. But this from the Daily Mail in Great Britain. A man who was fined for speeding $250 in 2014. He's adamant he was not speeding. He's determined to prove it. Mustafa Al-Shakarji. But he has appealed it now 5 different times in 5 different courts over 4 years. He's spent, guess how much? $100,000 to fight a $250 speeding fine. Sometimes you got to know when to quit. Come on, man. What are you thinking? We'll be back with my friend Alan Alday, who will be in studio. Call in with your parenting questions, 573-4-BREAD-4. We'll be back. Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. This is the theme song from my second favorite of the Rocky movies, Rocky III. Come on, Mr. T, how can you beat it, right? Eye of the Tiger, freshen up the franchise, a little new theme music, Survivor. I'm here with my guest. By the way, that could be good music to really gear you up for tackling parenting issues. And I'm here with your trainer, your Mickey, in the fight of parenting issues, and that is my good friend, Dr. Alan Alday, who is a behavior analyst and professor at the University of Kentucky, regular guest on the program. Alan, good morning.
Good morning. I'm just trying to think about I think you set me up way too much for that one.
I mean, sometimes you get a little battered in parenthood. You're over there, cut me, Mick, cut me.
So, yeah.
Have you seen, how many of the seven Rocky franchise films have you seen?
I saw the first four, and then I haven't seen the last three.
I've only seen one of the last three, and that was Creed, which is really good. I would recommend it.
You know,
it's a little less family-friendly, I would say, though, than the first ones. I mean, I can sit down with my sons and watch from a pretty young age, you know, but gets a little rough. But a couple parts in Creed, anyway.
Well, you know, I liked Rocky III with Mr. T. I mean, how could you not like Mr. T? I like to say I have a reverse mohawk, you know, but I like the one with, you know, with the Russian.
Adolf, I must break you.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good too. I mean, it was kind of cheesy and, you know, very. But it was good.
Well, so, a lot of transferable parenting lines, you know, from that third one, you know, because they asked, you know, Clubber Lang, Mr. T, what's your prediction for the fight? Prediction? Pain. You know, you say this now, what's your prediction for parenting? Pain. Some joy, too.
Mr. T is a good one-line actor.
Yeah, not a lot of range there.
I pity the fool.
I pity the fool, exactly. Anyway, we had a great time this past weekend. Had an opportunity to be with you at a parenting toolbox event we had here locally. And again, well attended, because the truth is, as you know, I mean, wherever you go, it doesn't matter the culture, it doesn't matter the place, you run into people who are facing challenges in how to manage behaviors.
Yeah, and you know, and that's one of the things that I always try to tell people is this is very cross-cultural. I mean, you know, at both the things we've had here in Lexington, we've had, you know, people from probably at least six different ethnic backgrounds mm-hmm. to attend, multiple from multiple countries, and you know, parenting struggles and knowing how to help your kids the best that you can is something that I think is a cross-cultural issue. And how do you, you know, how my kids engaging this problem behavior, how can I help? And I think that's the one unifying thing, which I always suggest to people. You know, I find a lot of the focus on cultural diversity to be more divisive than putting together. So this is something I find that brings people together, because we all, you know, I mean, I've been in homes of people from multiple backgrounds, and you know, they all have the same concern. My kid's doing something, I don't know what to do about it, and you know, and so I think this is something that is very unifying across all human beings.
We're here with Dr. Allen Allday. If you've got a question or a comment, 5734-BREAD-4, you can call or text that number, or you can email mikeallenshow@gmail.com. You know, not that you're necessarily a historian, but if you were to go back 70 years, do you think people would have these same struggles, or do you think some of this is part of unique to this generation?
You know, I guess, when you stop and think about it, the different thing between now and, I don't know, I mean, I'd probably have to go maybe a little more than 70 years, is you think about there was more, the family structure was just different. Mm-hmm. It was the community raised the child. It was, I mean, heck, even when I was a kid, you know, 40 years ago, it was, I could get a spanking at any of my neighbor's house, you know. I mean, it was just, you know, you disobeyed, this is what happens. And I think it has changed a little bit, in that regard, but when you really stop and think about it, you know, when it was that you know, you had the agrarian society, you know, every child had a responsibility, and you had to fulfill the responsibility for the family to eat, and if you didn't, you didn't eat. And you know, when you stop and you think about that, it I think it has made a difference. Of course, I'm not a historian, just, you know, when you just look back and kind of the way things were, you know, even the five-year-olds had specific jobs. Go get the chicken eggs. That's what you have to go do. You know, the seven-year-olds, you have to do this. The nine-year-olds, you do this. And the parents were always teaching and training you on, you know, the jobs you need to do. And I think there was probably more interaction between parents and children than today. I mean, you know, I know you pull up to any stoplight today and you look to the right or left, and typically you see if there's four adults or four people, two parents and two kids, each of them are on their own individual device. You know, and so the parents aren't even talking to the kids anymore. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't know how it's going to change in the next 30 years, but I guess we'll find out.
Do you think parents worried less 80 years ago about how their parenting decisions would affect the self-esteem or the psychological makeup of the child?
I think so. But you also have to think it was just different. I mean, even in other countries right now, you know, it's not as uncommon to have a child to die, you know, of a variety of reasons. And I think that parents, you know, if they weren't even aware that their kid was going to live to be an adult, I do think probably people did worry a little less, certainly about the emotional well-being of their children. I think as psychology and psychological sciences have progressed over the last 60 years, certainly we see more concern. Just like the book, I forgot the title. I should never forget the title, but it was the Dr. Spock parenting book. That probably, in my opinion, did a lot more damage than good in the sense of discussing how kids are growing up. And, you know, because I think we all do. We all want to seek consistency. We all want to seek predictability. And, again, going back to an agrarian society, the predictability was you're five. First thing you do in the morning, you go out and you get the chicken eggs. You know, you don't go and you play on your Xbox for the first 4 hours of the day. I mean, you have a job for our family to function. And I mean, that's.
And as someone, let me just say, who briefly collected chicken eggs when we had a brief stint on a farm as a kid, you better take a bat with you, because if you're 7 years old, five, you're 6 years old, those roosters be pretty defensive.
They can.
But I digress.
And a glove, because some, you know, they don't always come as white as they do in the store.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're here with Dr. Allen all day. If you've got a comment or a question, I know you wanted to talk about a topic today that you called dissing problem behavior.
Yeah.
You said hope it will make sense in your text. I'm anxious for you to help it make sense.
Yeah, you know, I know how, without question, that Carrie is probably rolling her eyes at me right now. The reason I came up with this is one of the things I kind of took from the parenting thing this past weekend, and a very common problem I see in schools, and actually talked to teachers about this week, are two disbehaviors, disrespect and disobedience. And so I figured to try to play on words and talk about dissing, because, you know, we want to dismiss the problem behavior, but dismiss the two diss behaviors. But anyway, so I think these are two things that probably occur more frequently than other things. I think most parents and most teachers are afraid of physical aggression, verbal aggression, threats, and that kind of stuff. But in reality, most of the time, disrespect and disobedience are much higher rates of behavior. So they occur more frequently. And people think, what? You know, I don't even know how to deal with that. And it lands on each of us all in a very, very different way. How do we deal with the disrespect and the disobedience? And, you know, and so, you know, I know one of the things I always try to do when I get a chance to come on here is to talk about some pretty broad ideas. I mean, obviously, if you're a parent and you're struggling with a kid with very severe behavior problems, you know, very severe self-injurious behavior, severe aggression or whatever, I mean, my suggestion would always be to seek out additional supports. But so, I mean, these things we talk about are kind of broad. You know, kind of broad, but still can be very effective. So I did want to kind of walk through, you know, how can you best manage disrespect and disobedience, and why would your kid do that? And then, you know, what would be the best, perhaps the best approach to deal with it. So anyway, that's what I'm hoping.
All right. Well, let's leap right in then on the first disrespect. You want to go there first?
Sure, sure.
We got about a minute, but we can sneak in okay, a little bit
sure.
here.
Well, I mean, I guess, and this is kind of a repeat, and I repeat these things a lot, but you have to figure out why is your kid engaging in either of these behaviors, and typically it comes down to what are they getting for doing the behavior, whether it be attention, whether it be access to an activity, whether it be something tangible, or what are they avoiding from doing the behavior. Is it? It's going to be perhaps attention. Perhaps they're trying to avoid engaging in an activity. Typically, is how it goes. Something they don't want to do. So the first thing is always trying to figure out, you know, why are they doing it and what are they getting out of it or what are they avoiding? Because all human behavior comes back to one of these two things. So, to start off with, if you begin to start thinking through your interactions and avoiding, gaining, and we'll pick it back up.
We'll pick it back up here in a minute. It takes a little ruthless self-examination there, too, to be honest about what they're getting or avoiding. We'll be back with Alan Alday. This is The Mike Allen Show.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota.
15 minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Happy birthday to the man in black. Johnny Cash will be 82 years old. I thought of that song with my guest here, Alan Alday, behavior analyst, professor at the University of Kentucky, because maybe you haven't been everywhere, Alan, but you've been to Ukraine, Oklahoma. You go down the list. Demopolis,
exactly.
Alabama. You've been a lot of places, and as you said, every place you go, behavior challenges.
But every place you go, there's behavior challenges. That's right.
Are you a Johnny Cash fan?
You'll
have to put up with that today. I'm a Johnny Cash guy.
No, I like Johnny Cash. My son loves Solomon. He loves clocks. He's always loved clocks, and so he actually Johnny Cash sings a version of My Grandfather's Clock.
Oh, really?
Yep. Probably never heard that one before. Maybe, you know, but we have that song. And
start them young on good music, and my 10-year-old loves Johnny Cash.
Well, it's good. I mean, you can't beat kind of old country. You know, I mean, new country is not quite the same.
I say no more. I agree with you wholeheartedly. So if you've got a question or comment for Dr. Alday, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. So we're talking about dissing behaviors, disrespect, disobedience. And You said really the first thing is to try to analyze and understand either what they're gaining or what they're avoiding through the behavior.
Right. And so basically, if you both think back, but more importantly than thinking back on it, pay attention to today and tomorrow and Sunday, when your kid engages in disrespect or disobedience, and watch what happens like right before that and watch what happens right after that and see if you can begin to look for a pattern. Because typically, most people tell me, well, his behaviors, you know, it's I can't follow a pattern with it. And, you know, but I step back and I watch and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, every time you ask him to do something he doesn't want to do or to stop doing something he wants to do, you get disrespect or you get disobedience or you get these things. So if you begin to watch for the patterns, typically there is a pattern that is that develops. And you know, one of the things I ask, especially I usually ask teachers this, is it's kind of a silly question, but I ask them, you know, because they'll say, "Well, it's kind of unpredictable. I don't know when it is." And I'm like, "Well, if I had $10,000 to give you, and I want to walk in your classroom and I want to see the problem behavior happening, and I need to see it within a minute of me walking in, what's going to happen?" And so even though they know I don't have $10,000 to give them, it's like it narrows down their focus to, well, during math. Oh, okay. So what happens during math? And then you get somewhere. So even as a parent, think about, you know, if I had $10,000 to give you, when could we most predict that your kid's going to be disrespectful or disobedient? And then you can begin to kind of identify the pattern. Is it whenever they're asked to do something they don't want to do? Is it whenever they've been sitting for a while and, you know, playing appropriately and you haven't given them any attention? And so then I reach over and I smack my brother upside the head and he says, "Ow!" And you go over and you give attention, you know, or whatever the case may be. Is it something like that? I find often that with disrespect and disobedience, it's a lot of times it is an issue of not wanting to do something. More so than it is an issue of gaining attention. But that's not always the case. So anyway, so first thing to do is watch your interactions. Think about past interactions. Watch the current ones. See if you can identify a pattern, second step. And then the third step, based on the pattern that you identify, see if you can come up with you know, what exactly it is you need to do. If it is, let's say it is, I ask my kid, you know, "I need you to take out the trash." And he says, "Okay," and then he just kind of walks around and never does it. So passive disobedience. They're not actively being disobedient, but then, you know, they don't do it and they don't do it and they don't do it, and you get fed up with them, and so you just go do it yourself. You know, like, "I'm just going to do it because I asked you 50 times. You didn't do it. I'm just going to go do it." And the kid's like, "Score one." Score one.
The guilt, the reverse psychology guilt doesn't work, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't work at all, and that's the thing. So when you start to see that and the kid is passively being disobedient to you and they just don't follow through, what we have to do as parents is we have to make sure they follow through. And if that means standing there with them and watching them do it, and it's inconvenient, believe me, it's very inconvenient, but it's something we have to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were teaching Solomon to make his bed up, I mean, it was very much, you know, "Go make your bed up." Well, 20 minutes later, he'd still be in there playing with cards. And I'm like, "Okay, well, you need to go." So he wasn't being mean about it, but just go make your bed up. And then we would go in there and stand until he made it up. Because he wants the freedom to play, and if we're standing there, he knows he doesn't have the freedom to play. So you have to be willing to work with your kid and to follow through to make sure they complete the task if it's something that they don't like to do. I'd say if you get something like active disobedience, where you say, you know, "You need to go do this," and they say no. Which the other day, ironically, Noah, our 3-year-old, Carrie asked him to do something. He looked at her and he said, "Mom, the answer is no." I thought, okay, well, I can't wait till he gets to be 16. We're going to have a fun time. I'm going to be looking for a behavior analyst probably. So.
This is a 3-year-old, right?
This is a 3-year-old, yes. Oh, yeah, it's going to be fun. I can't wait. I'm praying he goes like from 3 to 33, and then, you know, but anyway, that's probably not going to happen. But anyway, if you get something like active disobedience, where like, "No, you can't make me do it," my suggestion to you is, you know, not in that moment, because you're going to get emotionally involved in that moment, but in the future, think through contingencies or if-thens. You know, think through how can I, if you want to engage in a preferred activity, you have to do this non-preferred activity. And one of the things I think about a lot is I talk to parents, and they run their kids all over the place to soccer and to, you know, basketball and blah, 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 and their kids are involved in so much, like it's a right, but it's not a right, it's a privilege. And so things like that need to be set up as privileges, you know. So, okay, so you want to be this, if you do all the chores you have to do, then you can engage in the soccer game. And if you don't do it, you just don't go to the soccer game. And if you're the coach as a parent, you just let your assistant coach coach for you. I mean, you have to be willing to do the hard work, and it won't take many times of doing that before your kids are going to understand that you're serious. I mean, they just want to know, are you going to follow through or not? Because I know, you know, in talking to parents, I know a parent who, you know, the kid forgot his glove. Well, instead of, sorry, you're going to have to just sit on, you know, you're going to have to just not play today, the parents go out and buy the kid another glove. So the kid was not engaging in, you know, responsible behavior, and the irresponsibility was rewarded by still being able to play because the kid, you know, the parents wanted him to be able to play. And to me, that's one of the things you have to be very aware of as parents is, you know, disappointing your children is not going to kill them. I mean, that's part of life. I mean, I got a couple of articles rejected a couple of weeks ago. It stings still, but it's still one of those things that happen. I mean, we all are rejected at some point in life. So teaching them appropriate ways to deal with that is good. So that's active. You know, set up a contingency, and if then before, but do it beforehand so you don't have to do it in an emotional state.
We're here with Dr. Alan Alday, behavior analyst from the University of Kentucky and professor who does a lot of work with behavior issues and families and classrooms and with children. I made some outstanding points. Continue.
And then, you know, if you're talking about disrespect, a lot of times kids will engage in disrespect, and what they get is a lecture afterwards. So, I mean, if I know the only way I'm going to get mom or dad to give me their undivided attention is for me to be disrespectful, to say you're stupid, or, you know, or it could go much worse, but it's family radio, and we'll leave it at that. A lot of times kids will engage in that, and then because they know mom or dad will stop emailing or stop texting or stop doing whatever, and they'll give me their individual attention and make eye contact with me. And what we think as parents is, if I scream at you and point my finger and I get upset, that's going to have this moral impact on you and you will never do it again. However, I'd say if you find yourself doing that a lot, it's probably not working. You need to think of another way. So a couple of things. If a kid is disrespectful, one thing you do is just ignore it. I mean, I get told stuff all the time that would make most people blush. And I'm like, that's fine. You know, I mean, because I just know they're either trying to get out of doing something or they're trying to get my attention. And so I choose to give them attention whenever they're engaging in appropriate behavior. So you can ignore it. One of the best things to do, especially with teenagers, is once something is said and you've made your point, turn your back and walk away. Don't continue to engage them. And then the last thing, because I know the hardest part of this stuff is make sure you try to praise them when you see them doing things. Like, so a time they normally would be disobedient and they obey, praise their obedience. Thank you for obeying. Praise their self-control. Praise their leadership. Praise their love. Tell them what you want them to do. Give them more attention for what you want them to do and just less attention for what you don't want them to do. But anyway, it's hard. So just and pray a lot.
it does. It involves investment on our part. You know, sometimes we don't want, we have to be honest about the fact that we can be self-oriented.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Alan, thanks for being here again. Sure. Blessings to you as you continue on through your first Lent as a Catholic.
Yeah, thank you. It's penitent.
And thanks, Carrie, for letting him be here today. We'll be back on the other side of the hour. This is the Mike Alan Show.